Our next speaker is Dr. Gary Bergman. He teaches at Northwest College in Ohio. A professor of science and psychology, is often called upon in court to come to court as an expert witness in the areas of Jehovah's Witnesses and mental health, because he himself has been in a clinical situation helping Jehovah's Witnesses. And so let's give him a warm Southern welcome.
Thank you very much. It's very good to be here. I'm really very encouraged by so many attending here, because I think it shows your interest in a people who have been part of my life, most of my life, the Jehovah's Witnesses. There's a lot of concerns about Jehovah's Witnesses. One that I've spent a lot of time researching is the concern relative to the mental health of the witnesses. And I can mention by way of background that I was raised a witness. And when I was in high school, it was very clear to us that Armageddon would be here any time. And I never thought I would graduate. I graduated in 1964, but I never thought that I would graduate. Armageddon for sure would be here by 1964. So I didn't think about what I would do after high school, because, well, Armageddon would be here. And so when I graduated from high school, I was depressed that day, because it dawned on me the new world wasn't here. And now I've got to think about what I'm going to do with my life. And so I began to explore the various options. Of course, as a witness, I was the pioneer. But because my father was not a witness, and he was a scientist, his concern was that I am to go to college. He made that very, very clear. I had no choice. So I went to the elders about it and talked to them, and they said, well, if your father said you're supposed to go to college, they quoted a watchtower, which I can't remember the date, they quoted a watchtower which said, the head of the house says you're to go to college, well, try to argue with him, try to get out of it, try not to go, tell him you really want a pioneer, but if he really insists, either go to college or move out of the house. And since I had no job skills, wasn't worried about that in high school because Armageddon was coming, so I had no job skills, so I thought, well, I could either move out of the house, I had no idea what I was going to do, or, well, since my dad wanted me to go to college, if I want to live in his house, I better go to college. Then the question is, what do I study? And what I wanted to study was science. I love physics, I love chemistry, I love biology. That's what I wanted to study. But I thought, no, that's selfish. That's what I want to do. Since I was a Jehovah's Witness, my concern was, what does God want me to do? And I had noticed, even in high school, that there seemed to be a lot of unhappiness among the witnesses. Many of these people were very, very unhappy. Very unhappy. And so I thought, what I should study, not because I wanted to, but what I should study to help the witnesses was psychology. Now, I, on the sly, studied some biology and physics and chemistry as well, which is primarily what I teach now, but I studied psychology. Got my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, and eventually my doctorate, and was licensed as a therapist and worked with Jehovah's Witnesses as patients. But I began to realize that a lot of the problems that Jehovah's Witnesses had were not just problems because they were people. They were problems that were caused by the Watchtower Society. They were problems that would not have existed if it was not for the Watchtower Society's teaching. And I'll give you one example. I could give you hundreds. But I'll give you one example which I think illustrates why this is true. And this concerns a man, 45 years old. Who began to develop what seemed to be schizophrenia. He started behaving very strangely. He didn't respond to people. He would sit in a chair for hours. He would take a bath. He would get in the bathtub and turn the water on and just leave it on until it overflowed the bathtub and someone had to come in and turn it off. He would sit in a chair for hours and hours. Eventually, he sat in a chair, would excrete there, would urinate there, would have no contact at all with anyone else. Now, the elders were consulted in this, the church leaders, and their first suspicion was, well, he must be demonized. So they thought, now, how could he be demonized? So they asked questions, and they said, do you have anything in your house that came from the church? Is there any Bible in your house that was published by a denomination. No, no, no. Any crosses, anything like that. No, no, no. And finally it came out that they had bought, they were very poor, they were farmers, they had bought their furniture from the Salvation Army. Ha, that's it. That's why they have demons in the house. Take all your furniture out and burn it. That'll solve the problem, because then the demons will leave. Because in buying the furniture of the Salvation Army, of course, that brought the demons in. So they started a bonfire out and back, and they started to burn the furniture. Well, needless to say, that didn't help much. He was getting worse and worse. So finally, they just had no choice, because this man was not eating. He was urinating in the chair. It just was nothing they could do. So they finally took him to a doctor, and the doctor said, I think this is a brain tumor. It seems very much like, I don't know for sure, we need to have some more tests, and we may have to do surgery. Uh-oh, surgery, blood transfusion. And they said, I'm sorry, we're Jehovah's Witnesses, we cannot accept a blood transfusion. And the doctor said, well, this type of surgery, I would not want to do it without using a blood, or at least having available a blood transfusion. So they said, well, I'm sorry, we will have to take him somewhere else. So they called and called. Finally, they found a doctor who would do the needed surgery. And on the way to the hospital, which was in Detroit, the man died of the brain tumor. The autopsy showed, indeed, he did have a brain tumor. And the brain tumor was in such a place where the surgery is fairly successful. He likely would have been saved if they would have brought him to a doctor earlier, and if they would have had the surgery far sooner. And this is only one of many, many cases that I came across. And I thought, if this man was not a witness, none of this would have happened. None of this would have happened. So this was my desire to go into this field of psychology. And so as I worked in the area, most of my clients, or many of my clients, were witnesses. I began to realize there wasn't much I could do to help these people. The problem was the Watchtower Society and their incredible narrow-mindedness. Once they developed an idea, they didn't care what it did to anybody else. They were determined that this idea, we're going to teach it, regardless of what the evidence was against it. And needless to say, they did not appreciate what I was doing. And lo and behold, it wasn't very long, and I was asked basically that I was not well. I was never disfellowshipped, but I was basically was told that I was not welcome among the Jehovah's Witnesses anymore. I eventually resigned the Witnesses. They never did disfellowship me. And so this is where my interest in the mental health of the Witnesses came from. I guess part of it is my own frustration in the fact that in spite of going to college for 9 years, earn all these degrees, become licensed to do the work that I did, my purpose was to help the Witnesses, and I couldn't do that. I could not do that. Now, why is this of concern to us? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of cases you find of interest, but you can read about these things in the newspaper. Well, our concern is Psalms 144:15 says, and I'll read the New World Translation, it says, happy is the people whose God is Jehovah. And I was aware of that when I was a witness. And the only thing it said to me is that these people, their God must not be Jehovah. And then I read Matthew 5:3, which says, happy are those who are conscious of their spiritual need. And it didn't make sense. Why were these people, so many of them, unhappy? Luke 12:37 said, happy are those servants whom when the master on arriving finds watching or ready. Well, I thought Jehovah's Witnesses were constantly worried, watching, waiting for Armageddon. Well, they should be happy. There was something wrong. And then I began to look more and more into the history of the Watchtower. I'd always like to read about Jehovah's Witnesses, both the Watchtower publications, which I studied diligently. And I also, I guess back then, would have been ashamed to say, now, of course, proud to say, I suppose, but I read books that were written against the Watchtower Society. And the reason I did this, I rationalized, was that when I went to the door, people raised objections. And I wanted to be able to answer those objections. I wanted to be able to defend the Watchtower Society. to do this, I thought, well, I'll read these books written against Jehovah's Witnesses, and I'll learn how to defend Jehovah's Witnesses against what these people taught. And I thought I did that for a while. In fact, I think I did that quite well for many years. In fact, what actually caused me to leave was not what I read in books that were against Jehovah's Witnesses. What caused me to leave was the Jehovah's Witnesses themselves, what the Watchtower Society themselves did, what I saw them doing. And I found since then that most people leave the Witnesses not because of doctrinal problems. They leave the Witnesses because of problems they have with the Watchtower Society. Now, it's true that often doctrinal problems cause them to question. Questioning causes them to meet with the elders and send letters to the Watchtower Society. But this is not why they leave. They leave because of the Watchtower Society's response. And the Watchtower Society's response almost invariably is, accept what we teach. We are God's organization. This is the truth. Even if we're wrong, we're right. They taught. Now, you might wonder how they reason about that. Well, they teach that you're not supposed to run ahead of God's organization. Okay? And that's wrong. So if you teach something that they later on teach is right, in other words, they don't teach it now, but you say, well, I think this is the way it is, and later on, then they change their teaching, which they change all the time, their teaching. So that later on, they change their teaching, and then they agree with you. Well, it's still wrong for you to teach what's right because you are running ahead of God's organization. And they stress unity, unity at all costs. There must be full agreement. You are not to disagree at all, even with minor things, even with small things. And to give you a good example, in a talk that I gave at Kingdom Hall, I had mentioned that, well, Armageddon may not be here by 75. That's a date that we felt for sure it would be here by. It's a very strong, confident feeling, very strong. People sold their houses, and left Europe and to do missionary work, or South America and do missionary work. There were most witnesses were very, very confident that that would be the last date that Armageddon can come. Well, I mentioned on the platform that, well, it may not be here. I didn't say it wouldn't. I said it may not be here by 1975. And the response was, the elders talked to me and said, brother, where's your faith in God's organization? Where's your faith in God's arrangement? And I said, well, I mean, it may not be here. They didn't really teach, of course, now they stress this. They didn't really teach absolutely clearly it would be. They simply strongly, strongly inferred, almost for sure it will be. So I was, I guess, equivocating like the society had done. Except I was equivocating slightly more, and I guess one should not do that. And so, of course, who's right now? Well, I was right, because it didn't come by 1975. It didn't come, what, 17 years later. It still hasn't come. So it's been many years later, and I, of course, turned out to be right. But if I was disfellowshipped for that, which I could if I would have pushed it, and they said, well, now we're not going to disfellowship you, but if you push this issue, we will. Now, if I was disfellowshipped for this issue, and if I would want to seek reinstatement today, what would I say? Well, I was right, and you were wrong, so could you please reinstate me? No. You were wrong, Brother Bergman, they would say, because you went ahead of God's organization. You were not to do that. True, you turned out to be right, and we turned out to be wrong, but you're still wrong. I'm not sure if some of you, I'm sure, are scratching your head and saying, now, wait a minute. Now, let's see. You're right, but they're wrong, but I'm sure probably some of you are lost. Think about that for a while. Maybe I'll give you an outline. You can go over it and try to understand. What's important, I guess, to summarize that point, is that you have got to put, they feel, your full faith and trust and allegiance in the Watchtower Society and what they say. And they feel that they teach things that are wrong as a means of testing people. You see? So if they're wrong, that tests your loyalty to an organization. And they feel that God has done this. When you point out, I imagine to them, you've probably heard this, when you point out, but yes, you're wrong. This prophecy you made in 1914, 1925, and 1941, and 1975, and 1879, and 1884, you're wrong about all these. Yeah, that's true, but God, He let us be wrong because this is how God tests. He weeds out the weaker of the people. So God lets this happen. they reason. Well, that may be, I guess, logical to some people if you think about it, but if you think about it more, you'll find out that it's not. Okay, the second thing I want to talk about briefly, I plan to talk about this later, is the court work that I've done. I testified an awful lot in the courts relative to the Watchtower Society. Most of the cases I testify in are couples who, happy marriage, I have one just I worked with this week, I had 3 phone calls this week, I probably have an average of 3 or 4 phone calls every month, sometimes 3 or 4 phone calls a week, relative to this situation. And it usually is young couple, young children, recently married, 3, 4, or 5 years the marriage, good marriage. The woman typically studies with the witnesses, becomes a witness, and the male just cannot handle it. The reason he cannot handle it is because a lot of males, they have high expectations for their sons and daughters. They want them to go to college, they want them to do well in school, especially males want their sons to go out in sports. So many of the things that fathers want for their children, they can't do as witnesses. A lot of fathers have a very hard time with this. They are just baffled. And I think another problem is they see that the wife clearly puts the watchtower first. And she often says that. The watchtower is first. You, my love, are second. And a lot of males have a hard time with that. And invariably, as you may imagine, in many of these cases, divorce is the alternative. The next step is custody. And quite often, or in many of the others, a lot of these cases, last year I think there was about 1,500 of these cases, approximately. So there's a lot of these cases that occur. And my role usually is to try to simply relate the psychological research on the witnesses. I've done several studies. There's 4 or 5 other studies which I'll relate to in a minute, which summarize, these are done by professionals, they try to assess the mental health of the witnesses in comparison to non-witnesses. And my role typically is to simply relate this research, to try to summarize, this is the scientific studies done, this is what they say, this is the results. And if the child is raised a Jehovah's Witness, we can reasonably predict that probably there's going to be some emotional trauma. And you can go into detail and explain why. Okay, now the society typically is very involved in these cases. They spend a lot of time and a lot of money, and of course their job is to try to refute my testimony. They never have even tried to refute the research that I've done. They invariably try to somehow impugn me. And if you think about it, that's kind of irrelevant. It doesn't matter whether I'm a crook or a thief or a liar. That's irrelevant. These are the studies. I'm pointing them out to you. This is the study, Judge. Here's another study. Here's another study. Here's another study. This is what they say. You can read them yourself. It doesn't matter if I'm a liar or a thief, etc. That's irrelevant. But the society, of course, is not able to. They have not been able to point out one single study, none, that shows that witnesses even have average level of mental health. Nothing. So what do? There's an old saying in the courtroom, if you can hammer on your case, that's what you do. If you can't hammer on your case, you hammer on the persons. You try to impugn their testimony by hammering on them. And if you can't do that, you hammer on the table. If you think about it, that's what a lot of this situation now we're experiencing now relative to the riots. I guess a lot of that's driven home to me because, again, I spend a lot of time in court and I find the witnesses usually win because their tactics work. And the tactics basically are, as I'll talk about tomorrow, the tactics basically are, you lie. That's basically what they do. Although they don't always openly lie, they lie in the court's definition. The court's definition, if you've been in the court recently, is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And what witnesses often do is they don't tell the whole truth. They tell half the truth. For example, when they talk about birthdays, witnesses will say things like, well, we believe in giving gifts every day of the year. They never really answer, or they try to get around the birthday. Well, of course we give gifts on birthdays. And some will openly lie and say, well, we celebrate birthdays. Okay, this is how they get around it. And this, I think, is tragic. I agree with, there's a lot of concern about the court situation, and I must stress, I agree. It's a tragic situation. Our court in this, and I know this not only from my testifying, but I know this also from the fact that I worked for the court for 3 years. I did research for the court. My first doctorate degree was actually on the court system. So I have an enormous amount of experience working for the court. It's a horrible fiasco. It doesn't work. And I think most people in America know the judicial system does not work. Okay? And when... We know that, but of course, I guess I should say one other thing. I think it should be changed. I'm not sure what people are doing now will help change it. It should be changed. And the fact that it doesn't work, which is my point here, is illustrated in the cases when I testify in the situation of Jehovah's Witnesses. One thing I find I have a big problem with is that when I tell the courts what Jehovah's Witnesses believe, the judge looks at me and says, "Oh, come on." They just don't buy it. When I say Jehovah's Witnesses are strongly discouraged from going to college, you see, they can't celebrate birthdays. It's wrong to salute the flag. And I have a whole list, by the way, of things which are prohibitions, if I can get our overhead to work here, which I think illustrates quite well my point. Get this right here. There we go. Finally. Okay, saluting the flag. That's obvious. Wearing or owning religious or almost any other emblem or symbol. Flag waving. Any involvement in any way of another religious organization, including, as was brought out earlier, attending funerals or marriages in another church, birthdays, bonfire night, toasting at weddings, parties, voting, employment and defense industries, factories or plants, any direct connection with selling or producing objectionable items, from religious to tobacco to pornography. Some of these you may object to. Some of these probably are objectionable. But the problem is they have so many, many things, many of which we see as trivial. Accepting or giving blood transfusions, reading books from other religions. That's wrong. A Jehovah's Witness is not to read books about other religions. In fact, they're really not to read books about anything, except those that are published by the Watchtower Society. Now, that's not a rigid prohibition, partially because cookbooks are okay. Reading books about how to fix your car, that's all right. There are some areas that there's really not a problem with. But if you read books about religion or philosophy or psychology or some of those other areas, there's going to be problems. There's going to be problems. Masturbation, sterilization is wrong. Organ transplants, which was recently changed. Youth clubs, obesity, gambling, any political involvement, running for office, from dog catcher to mayor. We had one fellow who worked as a dog catcher. And he moved to another town. We had to run for the office. So he ran for the office and was disfellowshipped because he ran for office. He said, "Well, it's just a job. It's what I do for a living. It's what I've always done. It's just in the previous town I was appointed. Here I have to run. What's the difference? I'm a dog catcher." Can't do that. Hunting or fishing for sport, I should add here. Watching soap operas, laughing at dirty jokes, and that includes just about all jokes in many ways. Becoming homecoming queen. This really causes people to wonder. A witness is not supposed to become homecoming queen. Now, I'm not sure if you'd be disfellowshipped if you did accept this, but there probably would be a problem. The cases that I know of where individuals were elected homecoming queen without even running, they were to decline, which they did. Boy, Girl Scouts, Brownies, Cub Scouts, wearing mourning clothes, attempting to justify oneself, becoming an officer in a union, following a pop film or TV stars, wearing famous people or following famous people or man's philosophies, going out on dates without a chaperone, throwing rice at weddings, that's wrong. Displaying affection in public, except for momentary greeting at parties, giving money to the Red Cross, that's wrong, because the Red Cross gives blood transfusions or they're involved in that. Office parties, that's wrong, you're supposed to go home and not be part of office parties. Participating at prayer not led by a baptized male witness in good standing, that's wrong. Giving free rein to unbridled passion within one's marriage, that some people might find interesting. That has caused a lot of problems, by the way. A lot of problems. You are not supposed to give free rein to unbridled passion, even with your wife or your husband. That's considered wrong. You're supposed to have control while you're having sex, I guess. So, needless to say, that has caused a lot of problems, that prohibition. You can imagine the elders' committees talking about that and questioning couples as to what went on in the bedroom. You can see the problems that has created. And what I have found is there's a lot of elders, which I guess not a lot, but there's enough to cause a problem, of elders who you might call voyeurists, and who bring in attractive young couples and question them along this line for their own satisfaction. And there's been quite a few cases of this. Involving oneself in extracurricular school activities. This is wrong. Now again, for this one you may not be disfellowshipped. You probably would have some of your privileges removed from the congregation. You probably would have a talking to. And if you were rebellious in insisting on some of these things, you could well be disfellowshipped. Smoking, any non-medical use of drugs, Poppy Day, reading non-witness publications, and outdated Watchtower Society publications. That is wrong. If you have older publications, you could be talked to. And that is a concern because a lot of people leave the Watchtower Society because they have read outdated Watchtower publications. A lot of people that stumble. That was one of the big things that caused me to question the society. Because when I read the older publications, I realized that the Watchtower Society I was a part of today was not the Watchtower Society that was presented in the literature 20 and 50 years ago. Serving on a jury, that's wrong. Becoming part of the military or armed forces or national defense, that's wrong. Studying of the martial arts for self-defense, that's wrong. Singing Christmas, New Year, St. Valentine's Day, and so on, songs and products, involvement in any way in these things. Missing meetings, that's wrong. Unless you have a good reason, like you're ill or have died. Using such words as luck, fortune, bulletin board, goss, golly, gee whiz, all of these are wrong. Seeing a psychiatrist or a psychologist, that's discouraged. They've changed on that recently because I think they recognize that that is a big problem among the witnesses. And they are less stringent about this than they used to be. Going to college. And some subjects are forbidden, even if you manage to go to college. Social reform, self-help is discouraged. Questioning the society, of course, is forbidden. Chess, you are not allowed to play. Cards, checkers, and similar games. You are at least discouraged from checkers. Cards is considered improper, although that seems to vary in congregations. Working overtime is discouraged. Going to rock concerts is not allowed. Dating someone without the intention of getting married. You are not to date for recreation. You are to date only people you are considered to marry. The woman I married when I was a witness, I did not date her. We got married. I got to know her, and we got married. We never dated. We never had a courtship because we're not allowed to have a, quote, courtship. We are only to see people we intended to get married. The second time I visited her family, her mother basically said, "Do you intend to marry my daughter?" And I said, "Well, gee, I don't know her well yet. But yeah, I like her. I kind of had to decide right then." The second time I was with her. And I thought, well, yeah, I guess I would. And so that's it. We are engaged from that point. Making friends with a next-door neighbor, that's wrong because, of course, they're worldly people. One is to make friends only with witnesses. Now, you can have relations with worldly people, business, economic, if someone comes over and does your yard, that's all right. Social relations, no, only business relations. Or you can witness to them, now that's appropriate, but you are to be very careful about the relations you have with next-door neighbors and so on. Pantsuits, considered wrong. A lot of concern about that a few years ago. Hairstyles are clothed. They're very rigid about this. White shirts were in for years. And there were some witnesses who felt a slight bit of color on their shirt, like a light yellow or light blue. That might be all right. But that was inappropriate for many years. I got into trouble in the 60s for buying wire-rimmed glasses because I had to have plastic lenses. And at that time, the only way you could have plastic lenses was if you had wire-rimmed glasses. And so I got wire-rimmed glasses. Well, I was taken before the elders for this. You are not to wear wire-rimmed glasses. The reason was, back in those days, you were seen as a hippie. A lot of hippies wore wire-rimmed glasses, and therefore this was inappropriate. Okay, praising any political or religious leader, this is inappropriate. You are not to say anything positive about religious or political leaders, including things like Martin Luther King or Abraham Lincoln or George Washington. You are not to praise these people or say anything positive about them, or at least that indicates that you feel very strongly about them, or at least positive about them in a positive way. Now, I mentioned before that witnesses do recognize the fact that the mental illness rate is high and is a problem. This is a letter I got from a witness. He's a clinical psychologist, Larry Anoda, in California. He is an elder to this day. At this time, he was teaching at California State University, and he himself recognized that this was a problem. And so he wrote, this is when I was still a witness, in 1979, he wrote to me as well as several others, and you can see what he said. It has been my experience that mental health problems are becoming more common in these last days among the witnesses he's referring to. It seems that psychotic and neurotic disorders are becoming more and more common in my area. Hospitalization or outpatient care with worldly professionals has exacerbated their condition, the condition of witnesses. I'm wondering if a network of communication between the brothers involved with mental health could result in a more effective means of handling these traumatic problems. As an elder, I've been asked to consult with congregations, committees, district servants, circuit servants, and so on. Perhaps you brothers have faced similar situations. And I wrote back to him and said, yes, indeed, this is what I'm experiencing. And there's not that many mental health professionals among the witnesses, but there was a few. And all those that I talked to said, indeed, that this is a serious problem. Now, among the studies which show this, I'll only relate a few here, there are many others. Spencer is the latest one. He's an Australian psychiatrist, and his data is right here. This is in a British Journal of Psychiatry, and he concludes that of all diagnoses, okay, the annual rate per 100,000 population for Jehovah's Witnesses is four times the level of, four times the level of the non-witness population. And schizophrenia is two times the level, and paranoid schizophrenia is 1.4 times the level, and neurosis is 0.76 times the level. If I'm reading that right. Yeah. Anyways, he found clearly, and people have tried to criticize his study, but it's a good psychiatric study that found, indeed, the mental illness rate is much higher than average. Jenner, in 1962, a Swedish psychiatrist, he found that of this group, a very high number that he examined were mentally ill, Jehovah's Witnesses. Prescar, in 1949, study's kind of old, but he found out that of those witnesses who were imprisoned because of their objection to selective service law, 16% were on hospital status. Of these, 44% of the witnesses were diagnosed as psychotic, and 50% were diagnosed as chronically mental patients. Presker found, to summarize, that 8% of the total number of JWs were diagnosed as psychotic. This is about 40 times higher than the non-witness population. Now, this study may have been higher than you would find outside because he was looking at the prison population of the witnesses. But nonetheless, all of these studies show, and my own studies show about five times, the level of mental illness among the witnesses about five times the non-witnesses. All the studies have been done. True, there's not that many. But all the studies consistently say one thing, and that is the mental health is indeed high. The second concern, which I want to talk about, is the problem of brainwashing. Here's one of many headlines which talk about the problem of brainwashing among the witnesses. What is brainwashing? Well, it's a means of mind control. In fact, brainwashing is the more emotional term of mind control. And mind control basically is number one, emotional control. And to emotionally control someone, you need to instill in them fear and guilt. And I find among the witnesses, the primary means they have of control is in many, many cases, fear and guilt. You, first of all, they teach you, they force you to rely for your emotional needs only on other witnesses. You are to be involved only with other witnesses. And therefore, you become emotionally attached to other witnesses. Therefore, disfellowshipping is extremely traumatic. It's hard to stress how traumatic disfellowshipping can be. Because these now are all your friends. They're everyone you've known. When I was involved in the witnesses, everyone I knew closely, and most of the people I knew, period, were witnesses. And so they have an enormous amount of emotional control over you. The fear and guilt aspect is, you really feel, I really feel, when I was a witness, that if I accepted, for example, a birthday present, I could lose out on my everlasting life. And a good example was, my father is not a witness. When my wife and I were first married, we went to a get-together at my father's house. He gave my wife and I a present. What do? It's your own father. It wasn't even on, I think it was a Christmas present. It wasn't even on Christmas Day, although it was a Christmas present. I knew that. So I thought, well, I'll take it. I didn't want to create a stink there. So I took it. I accepted it. I thought, well, it's not on Christmas Day, so I'm okay. Well, the elders found out about it, and I was talked to. You could lose your everlasting life. Are you going to risk losing your everlasting life because of this $20 present? Well, no, I guess it's not worth it, is it? I was wrong, I felt then. Behavioral control. Enormous number of rules for dress, dress codes, all kinds of standards of conduct are impressed upon the members. Rules regarding just about everything. In so many, many, many ways, Jehovah's Witnesses don't have to think about many things. The thinking has already been done by the Watchtower Society. The Watchtower Society has already made rules on just about everything. We don't have to find the answer. All we have to do is look it up in the Watchtower. And sooner or later, just about every situation comes up and is answered or talked about in the Watchtower. So that is how you answer questions. We don't think about it. We don't reason it through. We look it up in the Watchtower to see what they have to say, by and large. Thought control. Thought control is extremely important among the witnesses. By prohibiting association with apostates, non-believers, strong non-believers, people who are involved in other churches, especially people who are opposed to the organization, you are eliminating from your thought a lot of ideas, ideas that these people have. By not allowing you to read or discouraging strongly you to read, quote, worldly publications, your source of information is what? The Watchtower, the Awake. And we are required to read the publications. The Watchtower, many did not. They really couldn't test us. But if you were conscientious as a witness, you were to read the Watchtower and Awake and all the books thoroughly. If you were conscientious reading those books, you didn't have time to read many other books. You didn't have much inclination. You were tired from reading those publications. And so the same ideas over and over and over. It said if you tell someone something long enough times, no matter how stupid, they'll believe it. I think Hitler said that, wasn't it? It's Hitler that said that. But this is exactly how they utilize thought control. And the third is control of information, which are pretty well talked about. They simply are denied access to information which would be dissonant with the information they get from the Watchtower Society. So once the indoctrination takes place, once you are enmeshed in the Watchtower Society, once you believe these ideas, then they become part of you. And no matter how silly, no matter how irrational they are, you accept them. And you accept them indeed because of mind control. Now, how do we help these people? I'm sure you're probably thinking, well, this is all well and good, but what can I do? I suppose the biggest thing you can do is understand these people. Understand them as Jehovah's Witnesses. It seems when you talk to them that they are firm in their faith and that they really believe all the doctrines and all the ideas the Watchtower Society teaches. But that's not true. They really don't. Most witnesses that I knew had clear, strong, maybe they were repressed, but they're there, doubts. They had very clear doubts. And I find when you argue against someone, even if they disagree with it, they tend to argue against you. You ever notice that? People tend to take the devil's advocate. If I'm questioning a doctrine, if I'm questioning the Watchtower Society, and you argue against it, I'm inclined, to some degree, to, in my mind, defend it. And so my experience is, it just doesn't help to argue against the beliefs. Now, how do you get through to them? My experience is, if you be a Christian, if you be all that a Christian is to be, they will see that. You don't have to tell them you're wonderful. Just be wonderful. And they'll see that. And if you befriend them, now some people might say, well, that's not very good advice because you'll be sucked into the Watchtower Society. Well, I don't think there's much fear of that. If you know and understand the history of the Watchtower Society, there really isn't much fear of you being sucked into them. And you should know the history of the Watchtower Society. I think a lot of these books about witnesses, written by ex-witnesses, they're beneficial primarily for non-witnesses. When I was involved in the witnesses, I read, I bet, every single book ever published against the Watchtower Society. None of those really had much effect on me. What had effect on me was primarily what the Watchtower Society themselves did. They drove me out. It's not that the Christians pulled me out. It's that when they drove me out, the Christians were there. And so it's my perception from 75 to 85, the estimate is 1 million people left the Jehovah's Witnesses, about, in that decade. A lot because of 1975, the failure of that prophecy. 1 million people left the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a revolving door religion. People leave the religion all the time. I'm amazed, since I've left the Witnesses, how many calls I get from people I haven't seen in 20 years. And I know they're witnesses, and they know I am or was. And so we say, well, how's the Witnesses going? Oh, I left. I'm amazed at how many people left. Most people do not stay for their lifetime in the Witnesses. It's very much a revolving door. What you need to be is there when their doubts start, and although there's nothing wrong with adding some doubts. And to do that, the most effective way is a few well-placed questions. Just a few, like, well, I read in this Watchtower here, let's see, well, maybe you can read it. It says this and this, and maybe you can explain that to me. Now look at it, and they'll say, wow, this is an old Watchtower. It's so light. Oh, okay, well, it just seemed you didn't believe that anymore, and I wondered why it said that. Of course, they may ask, where'd you get that old Watchtower from? They may be suspicious, I guess, of your motivations, but the most you can do is just be a good person. Be a Christian to them. Interpersonal relationships among the Witnesses, I find, are a major reason for doubt. Because if you have any questions at all, and eventually a lot of them do, you raise them to the elders or to the Watchtower Society, the trend is they will be suspicious that, ha, he's doubting. And you see, once that rift begins between you and the Watchtower Society, it tends to get worse. The rifts don't tend to get better. They almost invariably get worse. And all it takes is a little, it's like opening a candy bar. You ever notice that? They're so hard to get open. And once you get a little tear, it just splits the wrapper right in half. No problem at all. And that's the way it is with the Witnesses. If you can just get that little tear, just that small tear, you can get inside that candy bar with no problem. And likewise with the Witnesses. If you show them just a few things, and if then they raise those questions to the elders, that typically begins the tear, which eventually causes them to leave. I also find that in the Kingdom Hall, there are perpetual conflicts and power struggles. The only way you as a witness can achieve status is in the Kingdom Hall. You can't do it at work, that's wrong. You can't do it with education, that's wrong. You can't go to school and earn degrees, that's wrong. You can't do it in sports. That's wrong. The only way that witnesses can achieve status is in the congregation. That's it. That's the only place. And therefore, what do we find in the congregation? Perpetual and endless power struggles. Perpetual. And this is then what causes a lot of people to leave. This was really God's organization, they feel. Would we have this constant bickering about all these problems? No, they would not. Also, the witnesses tend to perpetually condemn everybody outside of the organization, and sooner or later, almost everybody within it. The internal gossip, which they are aware it's a problem, they constantly talk about it. Gossip is wrong, we shouldn't gossip, but all of them do, and it is a big problem. A clear condemnation of the Watchtower Society in reference to this is John 13:34, which said, "You, as Christians, are to love one another even as I have loved you. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, because you have loved one another." And if no other scripture, I find that this one, when your daughter dies, the witnesses are not even humane. My mother developed Alzheimer's. She was an active witness all her life. She developed Alzheimer's disease. She was no good at that point to the Watchtower Society. She couldn't go from door to door anymore. She could not do the things witnesses are supposed to do. So you know what the witnesses did to her? She was totally abandoned. They have not been by my mother's house. She's still a witness in good standing. They have not been by her house, as far as I know, in 6 years. They totally abandoned her. She's no good anymore. And this is caused, when I left the society, I can no longer, of course, talk to my mother, my brother, my friends. Most of my friends were witnesses. All my friends were witnesses. And most of my relatives. But what has happened with my mother has caused a lot of them to seriously question the Watchtower Society. Is this scripture true among them? By this love, all men will know that you are my disciples. Well, no. That's a horrible way to treat someone. It's a horrible way. And so to summarize, we need, as Christians, to show love and concern for these people. We need to try to understand them. Some of you, I hope and pray, will have in your heart a special burden for witnesses. That may not be your burden, that's fine, but some of you, I hope, will have a special burden for witnesses. It can be a very, very rewarding ministry. It can be extremely rewarding, partially because you'll find a lot of the witnesses are wonderful people. They tend to attract people who are sincerely concerned about pleasing God. A lot of them are extremely devout. The tragedy is they're following a wrong organization. They're following a man-made organization. Many of the people can be helped if you want to help them. And I pray that you do. Thank you.